Let me ask you about violence. I mean, you said, you know, everyone knows you make violent movies, you like violent movies. Why do you like making violent movies?
I don't know. It's like asking Judd Apatow, why do you like making comedies?
You just get a kick out of it, or you just enjoy it,
Well,
or
it's I think you know it's a I think it's good cinema. I consider it good cinema. You know, you sit there in a movie theater when these cathartic violent scenes happen. I'm talking about the cathartic violent scenes. I'm not talking about you know, there's two types of violence in this movie. There's the brutality of the violence in the day put upon the slaves
The rape and the
during the
whipping and
time.
the, yeah.
I don't think there's any rape going on in the movie, all right? But there's brutality to the slaves. That hasn't been dealt with in America to the extent that I deal with it. And I'm showing you that there was two Holocausts in America. This is one of them. We've dealt with the Indian Holocaust, the Holocaust of the American Indian in America. But we haven't been dealing with the Holocaustic aspects, the Auschwitzian aspects of the slave trade in America. My movie deals with that. Then there's the cathartic violence of Django paying back blood for blood.
And that's why, is that why you think people like watching violent movies? People who are not violent people or twisted people in any way, but why it's okay to go into a movie and enjoy the violence?
Yeah, well, it's a movie. It's a fantasy. It's a fantasy. It's not real life. It's a fantasy. You go and you watch, you know, you watch a kung fu movie and one guy takes on 100 people in a restaurant. That's fun.
But why are you so sure that there's no link between enjoying movie violence and enjoying real violence?
I'm going to tell you why I'm so sure. Don't ask me a question like that. I'm not biting. I refuse your question.
Why?
Because I refuse your question. I'm not your slave and you're not my master. You
I
can't make me dance to your tune.
I
I'm not
can't
a, I'm
ever.
not a monkey.
I
I'm not
can't make you answer anything. I'm asking you interesting questions.
And I'm saying I refuse.
Okay, well, no, I was just asking you why. That's fine. But you see, Jamie Foxx has said we can't turn our back and say that violence in films
well,
or
then you should
anything
talk
that
to
we
Jamie
do
Foxx.
doesn't have a
Then
source
you
of
should talk to
influence.
Jamie Foxx about that. And I think he's actually here, so you can.
I'd love to, but I mean, you know, it's interesting that you have a different view, and I'm just trying to explore that.
Yeah, and I don't want to.
Well, I
Because I'm
mean,
here to sell my movie. This is a commercial for the movie. Make no mistake.
Well, you
And
have
I,
interviews.
yeah,
So
yeah, this
you
is,
don't want to talk about anything serious?
I don't want to talk about what you want to talk about. I don't want to talk about the implications of violence. I haven't wanted, I've been, because you know, the reason I don't want to talk about it because I've said everything I have to say about it. If anyone cares what I have to say about it, they can Google me and they can look for 20 years what I have to say about it. I haven't changed my opinion one iota.
No, but you haven't fleshed it out. That's the only
It's
reason.
Not my job to flesh it out.
No, it's my job to try and ask you to.
And
that's
I'm
all,
shutting
you know?
Your butt down.
And that's entirely your that's entirely
This
your
is a
your,
commercial
your right.
from my movie.
No, I know, but it's my job to try and explore some serious themes as well. I'm sure.
Well,
you know.
I invite you to explore some serious things, but not things that I have already been on the record for talking
but
about.
Well, violence is such a big part of all of your movies, and it's you know, and it's an enjoyable part of your movies for so many people, and that's why I'm talking about this, because you know it's a very sensitive time at the moment. I mean, the vice president is talking to people in the movie industry today about violence in response
And you
to
know
the,
where I stand on
to,
it.
Which is that there's no relationship. And,
yes.
But you haven't said why you think there's no relationship.
It's none of your damn business what I think about that.
Well, it's my job to ask you why you think
and
that.
And I'm
you're
saying
very influential.
No. And I'm shutting you down.
But you have a responsibility as a filmmaker, surely, to explain a little bit about
No,
what
I
you're
don't
doing.
Have any responsibility to you to explain anything I don't want
no,
to.
Not to me, but to your viewers, to your fans, you know, to people who
they know
care about what
they
it is
know,
that you're doing.
They know where I'm coming from.
All right.
I mean, this is ridiculous. It's a radio show. It ain't a one-hour television spectacular.
From my cold, dead hand.
What's up, everyone? Thanks so much for joining me, episode 6 of The Carlo Show. Today, we're talking about Quentin Tarantino, whose latest offering came out a week ago, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt, and the lovely Margot Robbie. People wonder why this man still has a career. Why is he still relevant? Well, as a fan, I have to say, I think it's his detailed, well-developed stories, his rich characters that basically catalyzed the plotline with riveting dialogue under breathtaking, mood-establishing cinematography and production design. Take that with the great music he includes in it, the intense, effective photography. You never want to miss a second. I mean, as for me, and I think a lot of people have said this about the man, you go see one of his movies, you know how hard he works on them, you know how much thought and detail he puts into every frame, into every syllable, into every second. I don't want to miss anything because I'll be afraid that I'm going to miss something. And this movie was no exception. If you're listening, I want to say there's going to be a major spoiler alert throughout. Just I'm putting it out there right now. Spoiler alert. There are going to be some spoilers in this episode. So if you haven't seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, you might want to wait to listen to this until after you see the movie.
Well, I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker.
You know, for those of you who don't know, Tarantino basically incinerated himself onto the American and global cinematic psyche in 1992 with the release and cult success of Reservoir Dogs. I can personally remember friends making random references to Mr. Pink and Mr. Brown and Mr. Blonde. I didn't know what they were talking about. I hadn't seen the movie. This is the only Tarantino movie I didn't see in a theater, because by the time it was really, you know, had that cult status, it had already come out on VHS, and I watched it in a very cold, damp Southern California apartment at the time, and my mind was blown. The latest movie, it's awesome. It has its flaws. I think one of the things that, I don't know if you want to call it a mistake, he starts promoting the films a year in advance. So he gives you a teaser, and then 6 months before the movie comes out, he did this with Django, he did this with The Hateful Eight, and on this, his ninth film, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and allegedly his penultimate film, he's going to do one more, I guess. I don't really believe that, but I think he has a few more in him. Very well acted. Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt are amazing. Margot Robbie doesn't really say much in the movie as Sharon Tate, but it's essentially the story of, for those of you who don't know, Rick Dalton, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, is, it's in 1969 Hollywood. He plays a struggling former Western actor named Rick Dalton, and Brad Pitt plays his stunt double, Cliff Booth. So there's that storyline. Now, they live next door to Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski. And meanwhile, the third storyline is down the hill, these crazy kids being wrangled up by this strange new cultish leader named Charles Manson. So what I thought was that he was going to take each storyline, delve into each one, and tie it in at the end. He basically, it's a great movie. It's well acted. It's amazingly cast. It's beautiful to look at. He transformed Hollywood Boulevard into, you know, he set the time machine back 40 plus years. It looks, and there's no CGI, it looks as real as it could be. My issue with it is that he doesn't delve into the storylines. He talks about the, you know, there's the Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt storyline that it's most of the movie. He kind of dips his toe into the Tate Polanski relationship. You get some glimpses into the psychosis around the Manson family, but he doesn't go into each of them. And I thought it was, you know, it got slow at times, but it's incredible. I think Brad Pitt is going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, because even though DiCaprio gets top billing, Brad Pitt is the star of the movie, so hands down. And much like he did in Inglourious Basterds, Tarantino takes his liberties revising history. So I want you guys to go see it and to give it a good, you know, it's 2 hours and 45 minutes long. It did not feel like that. When I saw Hateful Eight, which is 3 hours long, that needed an intermission, because that movie, I'm sorry, it's great, but it's way too long. This didn't feel like that. This was paced enough where it did not feel like it was. And there's a growing sense of suspense throughout, for sure, because you're waiting for this historical event, this horrific event that happened in real life to occur in the movie. You're like, how is he going to portray this? When it gets to this point, what's going to be the crescendo? And so there is that building and that mounting, you know, tension throughout the 2 hours and 45 minutes. He spent too much time showing Leonardo DiCaprio filming bad Westerns and filming bad TV. There's too much that got tedious. So then you want to jump to the other storyline of, okay, let's get into the Sharon Tate-Polanski relationship. Now, see, I'm a I'm a big fan of true crime. I'm a weirdo that way. So I know all about the Manson murders. I've watched documentaries since I was a teenager. So I know all about that. But maybe the public doesn't. The rest of the public doesn't know the minutia of that weird, bizarre story. As for the Sharon Tate-Roman Polanski relationship, you know, I'm a film geek, so I know about them, both together and separately. I know about them. But Tarantino should have delved a little more into that. Honestly, the criticism that Margot Robbie doesn't have that many lines, that's true. It's valid because she doesn't say much in the whole movie, so you watch this beautiful, talented actress just kind of scamper through Hollywood without saying much. And I put the word out to get some feedback from the listeners, and Sean from Berkeley said it would have been good to tie it into what really happened. It would have really been good for Tarantino to tie the rest of the story threads into the historical event that actually happened. Dan from Livermore says, thought the ending was exciting, a surprise. The director is famous for violence and bloody scenes, so not shocked. Loved Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, and his dog. Many scenes I was asking, what does this have to do with the story? Like Sharon Tate watching her movie that she was in. And see, Devin from LA writes me, Carlos, once upon a time in Hollywood, I liked it a lot, but didn't love it. Lots of thoughts, but for now I'll just say many aspects of the film very much reminded me of John Schlesinger's Day of the Locust. Interesting. I got something from, and this is one of my favorite things, because I put out the word to, you know, give me your thoughts on the new movie or even Tarantino's work in general, whether you like him or hate him. I got something great from Owen from Phoenix. And before I read that, I want to play a clip that I love from 2003 of Quentin talking to Jan Wall of KRON in San Francisco. This is another example of him having to put someone in their place. Let's roll it, baby.
But one of the things you said recently, is this true or were you misquoted, that children should see Kill Bill, advising kids to see it? Did you actually say that, or is that a misquote, Quentin?
No. If it's an R-rated movie, if their parents will take them to go see it, they'll have a blast. I actually think from 12 up,
Really?
You know, is a really good audience that they will love Kill Bill. Girls will love it because they'll be empowered by it.
How are they empowered, exactly?
They'll go home, put a poster on their wall and stuff.
Quentin,
parents got to take them to see it, but if you're cool parents, you will do it.
Cool parents, really. Quentin, would you say this movie teaches girls to be empowered by being violent and vicious, just like boys in the movie? Would you say empowerment?
It empowers women, it empowers girls by the fact that Uma Thurman is a female warrior. She's a female avenger.
Right.
Revenge is like one of the classic staples in drama.
I see, but a lot of innocent
story,
people. I've seen the
and
film.
And to have
Quentin.
Girls not be not only the girlfriends in movies, but you know, this is a movie about women. They're not about cute girls.
No, it's about killer women.
All right, with their butts and their t-shirts to stop before their belly button, asking permission to kick ass.
Right.
These girls just kick ass. They're warriors. They live by a code of honor, and they die by that code of honor too.
And innocent people die along the way. It's about that kind of thing. Now, tell me this.
You know, innocent people die along the way because that's. Unfortunately, that's the story of revenge. Revenge is messy. It never works out the way you want it to.
Why the need for so much gruesome, graphic violence? Why not let us imagine
a little
of it?
Because it's so much fun, Jan.
Really?
Get it?
Oh, really? Okay, I'd like to see you walk down the street and get attacked by some kids who've just seen your movie.
Oh, but you saw me. See, Jan, you're all messed up because you're talking about real life.
Oh,
and I'm talking about the movies. You got to get it straight. Now, if you want to talk about the movies, we'll talk about the movies.
Okay, and kids at 12 can tell the
difference. We'll talk about real life.
Kids at 12 can tell the difference. You tell their parents that, Quentin.
Hey,
I
saw movies when I was a kid, all right? I saw all the movies that I'm basing my movies on are the movies I saw as a kid. And yes, kids go to a movie theater. They can tell the difference. Maybe you couldn't when you were a kid, but I could.
Okay, honey. We're getting the hook. You're doing well, obviously. You're laughing all the way to the bank. And I know some
parents
would love to
talk to you. I'm having a great time making a terrific movie that people are having fun seeing. Maybe not you, but you know what, Jan? I don't think I made it for you.
I bet you didn't, and I'm glad you didn't. I'm just sorry.
Well, don't worry about that, baby.
We'll move on.
Man, I don't know if that lady is still on the air, if she's still alive. She used to annoy me. Jan Wall used to just annoy me. I'm like, this is a great station here in the Bay Area. Why do they have her reviewing films? I don't get it. She was out of touch with a lot of tastes. I got to say, I feel like Casey Kasem today. I'm reading listener feedback and emails. And he's, dear Casey, WHVIT fuck. Remember that? He used to get all mad. That's something you should YouTube, is Casey Kasem getting angry at his staff. But I did get something I really like from Owen from Phoenix. And again, I put out the word to give me your thoughts on Quentin or this movie. And Owen did. And he wrote, Carlos, it's hard to explain just how much of an impact, how huge of an impact Tarantino films have had on me. The best way to describe it is by going back to when I was 14 and my mom and her friends took me to see Pulp Fiction. I really didn't know what I was getting into, and don't think my mom and friend did either. But when I walked out of that theater and sat in the minivan driving home, it was like I was moving through a new world of previously undiscovered, odd, scary, mystical, and dark, yet sublimely cool bits of cultural and societal phenomena. This pivotal moment in my adolescent development was primed to soak in like a sponge the divergent and rebellious aspects of art, culture, and life presented in the film. Pulp Fiction provided the exact serving of something new I was craving, and I wore out my VHS copy of the film in my bedroom for the next few years straight. Later on, other films of his, like Inglourious Basterds, I'm also able to watch over and over again, largely for the intense character dynamics that are so patiently developed throughout each scene, with a poignant sense of humor that can elicit a laugh from the most horrific subject matter. Tarantino's other films have provided more and more boundary-pushing exploration and rich aesthetics that make his work so iconic. Looking forward to seeing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and where he takes things this time. Owen from Phoenix. Couldn't have said it better myself. I have had that reaction to all of his films gradually. He will make you wait, and no other director does that. There are other people around today I love. Paul Thomas Anderson, Wes Anderson. I don't know when their next movie is coming out, though, and I don't sit there in anticipation, and I might have missed a couple. Like in Paul Thomas Anderson's case, brilliant filmmaker. I love all his films, except Inherent Vice, I thought sucked. Quentin doesn't have a movie I think sucked. I have, you know, minor criticisms about, you know, a few of them, but his standard is so high. His level of care and just craftsmanship for every work, I think, really raises the bar for filmmaking here in the States and around the world.
When I'm writing, it's about the page. It's not about the movie. It's not about cinema or anything. It's about the literature of me putting my pen to paper and writing a good page and making it work completely as a literature art, document on itself. That's my first artistic contribution. And if I do my job right, by the end of the script, I should be having the thought, you know, if I were to just publish this now and not make it, I'm done. I've done it. I could actually be okay with just saying that that's it. And then that can stand, and whoever wants to read it will read it, and I'm done. Now it's mine to F up if I go forward with it. Now, I always go forward with it, but I actually think for where I'm coming from, I want to love that script so much that I'm tempted to stop. I'm tempted to call myself a winner right then and there before I climb the mountain. So the point being of that is there's stuff that's in the script that I know will never, ever make the movie, but it just makes the book, the piece of literature, better. It's a better read. It's more emotionally satisfying. And then you can just like you do in an adaptation, you peel a lot of that stuff away.
And I wish I could go into, you know, would have been able to analyze thoroughly each of his 9 films. Would have taken too long. Wouldn't have been able to do it justice. And I have too much respect for the man and his work to like do a half-assed job. But I will read his filmography for those who don't know. I think a lot of people do. Started out with 1992's Reservoir Dogs. Pulp Fiction came out in 1994, my personal favorite. Jackie Brown came out in 97. The first Kill Bill Volume 1 came out in 2003, followed by Kill Bill Volume 2 in 2004. There's the half movie Death Proof that he doesn't count among his 9 already completed films, but that counts because he directed it. You have my second favorite film of his, Inglourious Basterds, in 2009. 2012's Django Unchained, The Hateful Eight, which came out a couple days after Christmas in 2015. And, of course, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like he said, and this man's strength and his forte is the written word on the page. It all begins with that script. He's an amazing writer, an incredible director, not that great an actor. kind of a cheeseball actor. And I can't say that I always enjoy watching him interviewed. I can handle it to a degree. I think you know what I'm talking about. But he makes amazing films. And like I said, has to do with the script, the development of the story, the evolution of the tension in each film, and that whole push and pull of release between drama and humor, which he has mastered, and he's one of the best alive at doing. In terms of casting, I want to give you some little tidbits you might not have known about, in terms of people who were almost going to be in his movies, just didn't do them. Michael Madsen, who has been a mainstay in a lot of his films, was originally going to play Vincent Vega, John Travolta's character in Pulp Fiction. If you don't know, John Travolta's career, most people know this, but in case you don't, I can't assume, his career was slogging. He was basically over before Pulp Fiction. The studio did not want to have John Travolta in that movie. Tarantino pushed for it. John Travolta was doing those, you know, stupid Look Who's Talking movies and was kind of at a, you know, definite low point, and essentially Quentin Tarantino saved his career. But Michael Madsen almost played Vincent Vega. Sylvester Stallone was considered and offered the role of Lewis in Jackie Brown, which later went to Robert De Niro, and he played brilliantly. And this is the biggest shocker. I didn't know this. Warren Beatty, Hollywood legend and Lothario, Warren Beatty was the preferred casting choice for the role of Bill in Kill Bill. And I guess he didn't want to, from what I have understood, he didn't want to go shooting in China for all these weeks, and it wasn't his bag. I don't think any of these choices would have worked. I think that everybody in his films is the perfect choice to play these roles, especially, in my opinion, the best role he ever wrote was that of Hans Landa in Inglourious Basterds, and Christoph Waltz stole the movie. Now, you know who he originally wanted to play Hans Landa? Leonardo DiCaprio, which, a great actor, just didn't fit. But the story goes, when he cast Christoph Waltz in that very vital role of Hans Landa, he's like, folks, we're making a movie. I got my Nazi leader here.
Because I'm aware of what tremendous feats human beings are capable of once they abandon dignity.
I can still watch that scene, that opening scene in Inglourious Basterds, many times when the camera starts doing the circular, the dolly pan, and it gets really tense. My God. And Leonardo DiCaprio is amazing. He could not have pulled that off. I would not have believed him. But I do believe him in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm not going to, you know, if I had to apply a number to it, I would say it's a strong 8+, 9-. Again, he should have delved into every storyline. I think he should have stuck to what actually happened in real life a little more. But that's just me. I'm not one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. So go check it out. It's playing, going to be playing all summer long. And I'm going to be doing other shows probably in the future about films and filmmakers. But I really want to get good guests. So any of you out there know somebody who you want to see featured on this show, drop me a line at thecarloshowmail@gmail.com.
Ezekiel 25:17. The path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the inequities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil men. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill shepherds the weak through the valley of darkness, for he is truly his brother's keeper and the finder of lost children. And I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. And you will know my name is the Lord when I lay my vengeance upon thee.
Still love it. A lot of people can't quote it word for word, and it wasn't actually in the Bible. But at any rate, want to give a thanks to Sean from Berkeley, Dan from Livermore, Devin from LA, and Owen from Phoenix. Special thanks to Malky Means King and B-Town Studios. Go to btownstudios.com for more information. Want to give a special shout out to Blue Microphones, the makers of the Yeti, my good friends Chad and Brian Geller at Ultimate Ears. Go to ultimateears.com. Episode 6 of The Carlo Show on jakeradiolive.com. Stay tuned for future episodes, and please be good.
Bye.